welcome to the Hermit's Lamp Podcast. I'm Andrew McGregor, and with each installation in this podcast, we're going to explore the world of spirituality, what it means to be alive, and how is it that we can bring our spiritual selves, tarot, meditation, religious or spiritual practices, into our daily lives. Please check out all of our episodes at thehermitslamp.com/podcasts, or you can search The Hermit's Lamp in podcasts on iTunes and download them all directly that way. So while I've got you here listening to this podcast, I want to mention a new project that I am rolling out. Can you imagine working with a tarot that reflected you in your life? Can you imagine working with a deck where all of the imagery was tied to your specific experiences, imagery, and history? Can you imagine going through a six-month journey of working with each of the cards and being guided through a process to help reveal both their nature and your relationship to them? Well, if that sounds like something you'd be interested in, then I invite you to check out my new project called A Tarot of Yourself, and it can be found at thehermitslamp.com/tarotofyou. The first round of this project is going to start in September. However, at any point, you can jump in and start your own journey with this process. So do go and check it out, thehermitslamp.com/tarotofyou. Welcome to the next episode of the Hermit's Lamp Podcast. I'm here today with Ellen Lorenzi Prince, creator of some amazing tarot decks and a generally fascinating person. So for those who don't know who you are, Ellen, perhaps you can give a quick introduction of some of the stuff that you've been doing.
Hey, everyone. Well, I started off creating the Tarot of the Crone. I think I began that in 1997, and that was first published in 2002. That was just to speak to my spiritual journey with the tarot thus far. I really had no idea that that would speak to anybody else when I did that. But I loved it so much. I hadn't had the time to do so much drawing until my other career, software development, kind of collapsed about 6 years ago. So then I started drawing again, and I just haven't looked back. And since then, I've done the Dark Goddess Tarot, which was published last year through Arnell's Art with Arnell Ando. And this year, we're doing the Minoan Tarot, which is based on the art and culture of the people of ancient Crete.
Amazing. You know, when I've looked at your work, and I had the real pleasure to handle one of the limited editions of the Tarot of the Crone a little while back, when I took on a collection of someone's tarot decks to sell for their estate, and you know, the work is so provocative, you know, and one of the things that I really liked about it is it doesn't seem to shy away from life being stressful or difficult. You know, it's beautiful and mysterious and wonderful, and there was sort of all of this representation of at least what I sort of saw as bringing the shadow side out as well, which I thought was really, really profound.
Yeah, I think that is very important in ourselves and in our society to acknowledge the dark things and the hard things. When we run away from age, we have too much of a youth culture that wants to deny the wisdom. And when I was doing the Tarot of the Crone, I felt so called to do it. And at the same time, there was self-doubt. You know, who am I to be doing this deck for the Crone? I'm only 40 something, whatever I was when I first started doing that. And then I felt so validated one time when an 80-year-old woman emailed me and said that in looking at my images online, she felt recognized for the very first time in her life. And that was such a good feeling, you know. Old people, old women are so often invisible if they're not in positions of power. And how often
so,
are they?
You know, self-doubt is something that's it's always a factor, right? You know, I mean, and it's such a sticky thing, because I know for me, I experience self-doubt, but I also certainly occasionally experience arrogance as well. And, you know, working to kind of juggle those two, right? It's such a...
Sure.
It's such a thing. So how did you keep going through that? How did you kind of move beyond that into making all the work happen?
For me, it helps because I feel like that I'm doing my work as part of my own spiritual quest, in a way. So if I'm doing it either for myself or for my goddess or for my path, and can think about an audience only in the sense of people who might be interested in that and looking at my path, but not thinking about doing it for someone else or to fit some other mold. I mean, that's the way I can keep going, because that's my life. And sure, I don't know what I'm doing. I mean, when I started my path as a priestess with Hecate in the 1980s, there weren't all the books out on how to be a priestess or what does this mean even to feel called in a spiritual direction, in a different spiritual direction than what was currently offered in, you know, 1980s mm-hmm. United States.
So how did you come to find Hecate, or how did she come to find you?
I'd gone to a women's spirituality retreat that was facilitated by mm-hmm. Starhawk. This was in 1985, and I'd read her books, The Spiral Dance, and the next one that came after that, which I can't remember, oh, Dreaming the Dark. And I'd been doing some reading. I've been reading Robert Graves' The White Goddess. But in 1984, my daughter was born. And then all of a sudden, it was like, it's not enough just to read about this and have this in my head. I had to act upon these feelings and create them, manifest my world a little bit more. You know, it couldn't just be something that I would dream about or imagine. You know, it had to be something that I worked at and built for her sake, that it would exist more in the world. And so then I went to this retreat, and that was actually, where was that, on Quadra Island in British Columbia, one of those little tiny islands that's between Vancouver Island and the mainland. It's very beautiful up there, Hollyhock Farm, which is a beautiful retreat center. And there I fell in with a group of women, and we all invoked Hecate together and had this amazing, powerful experience while we were there. And then even when we split up and we lived in across the United States and Canada, there were five of us, but this was like my first circle, and it was before the internet. And we would like write letters and photocopy five copies of them and send them all out to each other and have this, and then arrange to have like these times where we would meet back in this sacred place that we'd created when we had been all together. So that was my first circle and my first kind of traveling with Hecate.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, Hecate is an interesting choice, or I mean, not that there's a choice, I guess, but an interesting, you know, energy to work with. When I first started reading professionally, I worked at a store here in Toronto that was run or is run by a bunch of Wiccans who predominantly, I mean, everyone has their own practice there, but the sort of central focus is often around Hecate. And I had a dream when I started working there, not long after I was there. You know, they had just done a great big invocation of her and, you know, big ceremony and stuff like that. And, you know, that night or a couple of days later, I don't remember now, I had this dream where she showed up to me. And, you know, there she was, you know, almost looking like a black hole in space. You know, there were features, but just this like sort of intense, you know, darkness almost, right? But with features and shape. And she basically looked at me, gave me the once up and down and said, "You're not one of mine, but you're okay." And then she left. And I was like, good, I'm glad. Because, you know, if it wasn't okay in her book, I'm not sure I would have had a job the next week, you know?
Oh, I think I was drawn to her. I always had a very active dream life as a kid and also a lot of different psychic impressions. And I didn't grow up in a family where that was, you know, appreciated. So I soon quit, like, tried to tell about my dreams at the breakfast table or anything like that. So there was always that mystery of the something more that I was interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also always had a real attachment to older people, and not only my grandmothers, but my great grandmothers, and they were the ones who seemed magical to me, who told me stories and made things. Something that my mother was with her, you know, four children within the space of 5 years was a little too busy to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was all part of it. And then there was also just the aspect of pain and death, which I faced a lot of when I was 13 and I had surgery on my spine for scoliosis. And, you know, I had to spend several weeks flat on my back in the hospital, and then afterward had a body cast for 9 months. So then I went even more inward at that time, doing my eighth grade science fair project on hypnosis, because I was trying to use self-hypnosis to heal myself and to work with the pain. So that was pretty fun. Those were my first kind of journeys into trance and how I taught myself how to trance, which is, you know, makes it easier to have relationship with these, you know, more subtle energies and entities that might be out there. But yeah, that was fun.
Well, I think there's something to the experience of suffering, stuff like that. You know, I mean, at any time, certainly it is an awakening and so on. But, you know, when I was 14, I was in the Dominican Republic and I was driving a scooter and I got hit head on by a dump truck that was passing around.
Oh,
my corner.
God.
And yeah, no helmet, nothing, you know, just lucky to still be alive. Right. And I broke my femur in a couple places. And so, you know, I had that, not quite as long as you, cause I could get up on crutches and stuff after a while, but you know, I had that, it was a year before I walked properly without crutches again, you know, and it was 3 or 4 months. I missed, you know, this was in August. I missed the entire sort of fall term, I did all my work at home because, you know, I had a solid leg cast from my hip to my ankle.
Wow.
I couldn't do anything. Right? And, you know, so, and that sort of, I think that at, especially when we're older and people I see who are older, it wakens them up to the other side. But I wonder,
especially at that age, know, it's like an initiation of, you know, a painful one, mm-hmm. but yeah.
And here we are sort of, you know, at that age, like around puberty and around that time where we're starting to put behind us being a child and putting behind us the child things is, you know, this where people start to sort of lose track of that magical world that we lived in as kids, I think. And, you know, I know for me, and it sounds like maybe for you, it kind of firmed up something that otherwise might have sort of slid further away for growing up.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, that's a great way of looking at it. Yeah. I think that's true.
Mm-hmm. So have you always had this comfort with your shadow stuff? Has it always been something that you've been open to? You know, because in both your decks, there's that sort of prominence of respecting and acknowledging the shadow.
You know, for me, it's interesting because I guess I just have such curiosity about what consciousness is, you know, and who am I, what am I doing here, all of that other kind of stuff. And so what other people have really seen as like exploring the shadow or exploring the dark, I just see it as exploring a reality and exploring myself and just being, trying to be honest and open to knowing what's there. And I guess for other people that is really, looking into the dark or looking into shadow, and I just see it as, well, that's just us, right? You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know for me, you know, I don't know that I had it as clearly formed as this question at the time, but, you know, I know for me when I look back and I talk about that time, I basically, you know, the story that I understand it to be now is after that accident, I wanted to understand everything.
Right.
And that was the good, the bad, the ugly. I wanted to know what was true and real and what, you know, what was life? Why, you know, like you say, why were we here? What are we about? What's this reason? You know, let's make it all make sense, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, I know a lot of people who are very intimidated by some of these kinds of energies. Did you ever run into that? Is that something that ever was there for you, or was it always kind of just your curiosity saw you through?
Yeah, it's more than curiosity, I guess. You know, when I was younger and... another experience that I've had is growing up with an older sister who was mentally ill.
Hmm.
And so this would be, you know, even before the operation, you know, with wanting to understand what's going on inside people. And she sometimes would generate this darkness and this very dark energy that sometimes I could see outside of herself as well as in her, because, you know, and I don't know if it, you know, when I was a child, and I didn't know if that was something that she was putting out there, and I don't think I still know, or whether it was something, you know, she had been drawing to her or what, but I could see these hurtful energies that were harming her.
Mm.
And so I don't know how it is because when you grow up with it, it's kind of like learning language, you know, how you can't answer how you learn to speak English. You know, I can't mm-hmm. answer how I learned to defend myself from these other energies, or to understand that there were these different layers of reality, and to keep track of each one, because it's when you got them mixed up that you got into trouble. You know, it was just something I learned from her example of how being psychic and open destroyed her, and so I wasn't going to let that happen to me.
Mm-hmm. It's so complicated. You know, I've worked with a lot of people, and because I see energy, you know, and I read for, you know, working out of a store, even my own store, I still read for, you know, unless I really don't want to, I read for whoever comes off the street, right? And, you know, you end up with these people whose energy are exactly like you're describing. You know, what is the cause? What is the byproduct? What is their energy, and what is other things? It's so difficult to clarify.
Yeah, they seem so ridden by something very full of pain or anger, or, you know, something. It's very painful to see.
Yeah, and it's not something that I think that, I mean, never mind as a child, but even as an adult, even, you know, having a lot of experience reading for people and working with people, it's not something that I often have any good clear answer for, too.
Yeah.
You know, it's often like, I don't know, I would say there's definitely both, right, at play, or, you know, whatever, and I'm like, where do you even suggest to work or help somebody with that kind of stuff? It's so complicated.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course I don't read for the public anymore. I have done so in the past, but I feel like, you know, I prefer just drawing my cards or, you know, going out to teach once in a while. And that's how I'll do all my public service all at once instead of.
Uh-huh. You'll tend to the congregation.
Right.
Are you still in touch with those people that you started with?
No, we have lost touch. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm in touch with a few people from my very first in-person circle that happened just a couple years after that, when I moved to Davis, California, and found a group to work with. Yeah, so that helped a lot, too, with my development, and I was teaching tarot classes and all kinds of fun things through the experimental college at UCB, which was a great program that they had.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting to me also that one of the pieces that I'm hearing, and maybe I'm reading too much into this, that you're finding yourself towards focusing on empowering other people as your work, as opposed to giving them the answers.
Yeah, that was the last card reading that I, you know, back in the 80s when I first started, like, just diving into all of this head first, because it was so exciting to discover tarot and discover women's spirituality, which had happened at the same time for me. But this woman, I was just laying it all out there, all this information about what her choices were. And then she turned to me and she said, "Okay, but what should I do?" And I couldn't stand it. I couldn't stand the idea that someone was just going to abdicate their power over to someone that they had just met, mm-hmm. you know, to that level of making a life decision. I mean, I thought I was just supposed to provide the information that wasn't readily apparent so they could make a more informed decision, more in alignment with good energies that were out there or with their own self. And I couldn't stand being cast in the role of a guru. And of course, this is also things where I was having trouble in the circle too, you know, wanting to get other people to take more leadership role.
Mm.
And so what my husband and daughter and I ended up doing is selling everything we owned and buying one-way tickets to Europe and going to Greece because I figured I'd, you know, contact Hecate there and just have a more intense experience and leave behind all these other questions about how to do it for other people and go deeper mm-hmm. for myself. So,
yeah, it's fascinating the way in which people, I'm always honored and sometimes surprised by how much people will just show up who've never met me and just, you know, out comes the deepest, darkest, right? You know, and it's great to be there for that. And
that is the wonderful thing about tarot, which is why I love the tarot conferences. You know, I can be a very shy, reserved person, but it allows us to speak about important things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did I hear? Are you presenting at Reader Studio?
I am. It's so exciting!
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess you can't be shy and reserved in that point, though.
I'll prepare, and I psych myself up for it, and will, you know, faint afterwards or before. But
excellent. We'll make sure there's a chaise lounge or something at the side for you, so you can, you know, retire there once
you're
done.
Yeah, it's funny. I guess, you know, I have, when other people have seen me speak, they don't often see the nerves because I guess I keep a pretty poised persona. Like, people don't see I'm mm-hmm. shy. They just think I'm either stuck up or reserved or something. I don't know because of my quietness. But I don't look all that nervous on the inside. I just shake in my boots. I mean, on the outside, I just shake on the inside.
That's hilarious. So I'm curious, you went to Greece.
Yeah.
Did you find a stronger connection with Hecate there?
I did. I did a lot of writing, and it was really a fascinating time. And at the same time, it led to eventually my getting kind of like a crisis of faith where I got pissed off at Hecate and I said, you know, I don't want you as my goddess anymore. I'm going to find somebody who's nicer to me. Or not so challenging.
I'm curious how that went over.
Excuse me. Mm-hmm. Oh, this was after Greece, we went to England. The work, you know, the under the table work that we'd been doing on the island of Aegina had run out, and so we decided to go to England. We'd met some people in Greece that invited us to visit them there in Shrewsbury. So we went and lived there for a while and found work there. But before finding work and finding a place to live, I was looking at, you know, being homeless with nothing to feed my child the next day, and I just got really pissed off at Hecate. So I was going to be, like, not friends with her anymore.
I'm taking my toys and going home.
Yeah. So, I mean, but, you know, of course we got through everything there. We eventually came home to California at the time. And then I was like, okay, you know, I'm going to try and find, you know, another goddess to work with, because then I missed that, you know, I missed that spiritual connection and relationship. So, mm-hmm. So I tried, but nothing worked, and nothing really, you know, came alive for me the way she right. had done. And so, so I just started, like, rebuilding the relationship. I would go into trance, and at first, all I could find was, like, this desolate red land. It was the model of the Shadow of Wands, actually, in my Tarot of the Crone. You know, many of the cards of that deck have a little trans adventure story with Hecate connected with them.
Uh-huh.
But I kept on working at it, and then actually drawing the Tarot of the Crone was kind of like how I rebuilt my relationship with her. And that was why it was dedicated to her. And mm-hmm. So since then, we've been all, you know, hunky-dory.
Good.
But, you know, it's just like any other long-term, intense, or valuable relationship that you might have, whether it's with a partner or a child or a friend. You know, it takes, you go through ups and downs, and it takes some work and dedication to be, to keep it going, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I think that, one of the things that I do with people is, because I also do sort of mediumship and channeling kind of things, is I'll introduce them to their guides, mm-hmm. you know, or help them build their relationship. And, you know, it's rarely what we think it's going to be. It's often not who we think it's going to be. And, you know, but it's always what it is, and it's always what we need. But maintaining those relationships are so, you know, it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of patience and a real willingness, I think, to open up and be understanding, you know, because I did one for somebody recently, and they're like, what do you mean my guide is a Catholic nun? I don't like that. I don't want that. And I'm like, well, dude, she's here. This is what she's got to say, you know.
Yeah.
It's cool, but it's definitely challenges us, because I think on this side of the veil we have all these like ego driven notions of, you know, what control and separation and want and desire, and from the other side of the veil they're basically like, we don't really care. Just do this, you know.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I've never been afraid of, like, looking at my dark side or my own faults that might be revealed by, you know, this process, because I just feel like, okay, but then if I know them, then I can get better. I mean, so ignoring them, it doesn't help me, you know, be a better person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's just it, you know, and I think that there is, that's the gift of having a relationship like it sounds like you have with Hecate and I have with the spirits that I work with. Even when it's hard, it sounds like there's faith. You know, I know for me there's a sort of faith that it's going where it needs to go. It's going in the right direction, that I can trust it. And that if I work through it, it'll be for the best.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, another time I'll tell you another story. This was this was some time when I was kind of wondering about, you know, because there's a part of me that's very logical, you know, as a computer programmer and all of that kind of stuff. And then at the same time, there's always been that very magical part that was talking to the trees and the moon since I was a child. But one time I was just like, oh, am I fooling myself with all of this stuff? And I wanted a real manifestation, physical manifestation from the goddess to prove to me that this was all real and I wasn't fooling myself. And, you know, I gave her a month and, you know, I guess this sounds kind of funny. I don't mean it to sound as like I'm a spoiled brat. It was all done respectfully, but, you know, asking for, you know, a real sign. And so then I was like just sitting on the beach and watching the waves and not trying to think about anything, but thinking about, you know, during this, the cycle of the moon was kind of wrapping up and we were getting to the dark moon again. And was I, you know, was she going to speak to me? And then this elderly woman with white hair and a black dog walk by me on the beach and call out, she calls out to me, "Love you," and keeps walking. And, you know, the black dog is Hecate's main
sure.
Companion. And the old woman, I was just like, okay.
Got it loud and clear. Thank you.
And, you know, whatever it was of this woman who was a real woman being feeling like she should suddenly call out to me as she walked past, who knows, you know, but still, you know, there is, I mean, that's how the powers work in our world, is through our world, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's often, what you said is certainly 100% obvious and profound, but at the same time, stuff like that, I see people who miss it a lot,
yeah.
You know? They're like, they want the fireworks of it, right? You know, and I mean, to me, I hear fireworks in that, right? But I'm just like, wow, that's amazing. And yet, you know, it could be so easy to be like, oh, but you know, what I really wanted was some other notion of how that would happen.
Right. Yeah, I've had that in teaching classes. I was doing something on scrying before. And so then, you know, and various techniques for it. And so we were using water. And then going around in a circle, and people were talking about what they saw, and this one woman was like, oh, I saw, you know, because some people saw, oh, I saw blah, 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 you know, and they were describing some great scene, and this one woman said, oh, all I saw was a pen. And I said, but what does that mean to you? And she says, oh, I want to be a writer, and I da-da-da-da-da, you know.
Yeah.
And so she was getting all disappointed because she wasn't having the technicolor, but her psyche or whatever it was really trying to get the message, you know. It's just like, it's direct, it's this. Pick up your tool and get at it, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love that, you know. I was, when I get out of my own way, so many wonderful things come together. You know, I was teaching a workshop last year, and we were trying to get people to connect to their guides and have their guides tell them what cards to use for something. And, you know, and I was managing like 30 people and, you know, running the workshop and whatever. And then somebody like asked me a question, and I just turned and looked, and I'm like, it's the Six of Cups or whatever it was, right? And then afterwards they came up and they're like, oh my God. And I was like, you know, in that moment, I didn't think, I didn't analyze. I was like, I need to give them an answer. What is the answer? And there was no, you know, although again, it was important and, you know, the consequences of it were really great, but there was no fireworks about it. It was just like this vague sense of something. And I was like, it feels like this is the card you should have. There you go.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I've been working with this myself in a way, and especially inspired by the Hanged One card in the Dark Goddess Tarot that I did. It's the goddess Tiamat, and I feel like there's this underground stream in a way, and I know that term has been used for other things, but this is how I'm sensing it, is that there's this power and this flow that exists below or surround or through, you know, however it works, our everyday world, but the everyday world is so bright and shiny that it distracts us from this. But the more we tap into this deeper part, the more we can trust that when that's at work, and to sense that, and we do these things like, oh, I don't know why, but I'm going to go in this direction, or I'm going to say this thing, or I'm going to, you know, and then it leads to something wonderful or some inspiration or some deep connection. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm learning to trust that and to know when it is that coming from this deep place, you know, and not coming from a surface desire or urge for something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the desire to know why is insidious and horrible. You know, like I find in readings that I often steer people away from that question. That I'm often like, you know, what's the why? It didn't work out. You know, why? Because it didn't. Because it couldn't. Because, you know, because you'll never know, right? And that searching for that answer. Whereas, you know, like, I mean, certainly, like, you know, you're the Hanged One, and you know, the Hecate as well, you know, they're all kind of mysterious too, right? There is no,
right.
You don't get to know who they are necessarily, like in a general way, in a certain way,
right.
Yes, but they're always bigger, deeper, more unknowable, more mysterious than our puny little brains can ever encapsulate.
Oh,
right?
Exactly. Yep.
Hmm. And so, what's the Minoan thing around? You know, I'm curious about that. Your next project, what's that?
Oh,
going to be like?
Yeah, that was so much fun. Now, the Minoan isn't a dark deck at all. It's maybe been in the shadows because the Minoan culture, as an ancient culture, isn't as well known as the Egyptians or the Babylonians, their contemporaries in time, you know, say 1500 BC, something like that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so they were on the island of Crete and some of the surrounding islands, and this would be 1,000 years before classical Greek civilization. And they were just the most amazing culture. You know, they were technologically advanced. They had waterworks that wouldn't be rivaled until the Romans come along 1500 years later. And mm-hmm. they had a much more you know, they were still ruled by an elite, but they had a much more egalitarian structure. I mean, there's no slave quarters. There's no mass graves. There are towns of lovely two-story homes and family tombs. Mm-hmm. There are pictures of women in men's dress and men in women's dress, and they, you know, a woman dressed as a man if she was doing a certain role, like being a bull leaper. A man dressed as a woman if he was doing a certain role, like being a priestess in a ritual. there was this flexibility and this embrace of their sexuality and their creativity and nature. Their art has a naturalness that isn't seen in the more formal art of, you know, say the Babylonians or the Egyptians. And they're just such a such a wonderful culture, and I really wanted to bring them to light, that this, you know, sacred, technologically advanced, creative, egalitarian society that worship the goddess, worship nature, worship themselves, you know, is not a fantasy. It is our history. Mm-hmm. And so I want to put that out there. And it was funny, I had a prototype at the Reader's Studio, and I was going to read with it, and the man asked a question about his job, you know, and he's a financial analyst. So I'm looking at these, you know, these cards all based on archaic ancient art, and thinking, okay, are they going to answer this question? And they did. It was beautiful, you know, another aspect of the magic of tarot, I think, when things like that happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that any deck can answer any things, you know. I'm in the process of writing a book on the Thoth deck for beginners. And, you know, it's basically, it's the deck I started with, right? And, you know, people are always like, oh, you can't start with that. I'm like, why not? It's a great deck.
Sure.
You know, like, why not start with anything, you know? And for so long, I only ever really read with that deck for like 20 years. It was the only one I mean, I owned a couple others, but I basically never read with them. And, you know, I'm sitting here now looking at my desk, and I've got like 15 decks on the desk in front of me and whatever. And I'm like, hearing your story, and I'm thinking, you could read for anything with any of these decks. They might give you a slightly different quality of an answer, you know, the Circus Tarot versus the Gaian Tarot versus the Sola Busca, but they'll all give you an answer, you know? And I think that it's just about that listening, and it sort of reiterates what I hear in your story about this culture, is the flexibility, you know, and that sort of being open to allowing things to be what they are, to be what is needed, to be, you know, to be anything, as opposed to holding on to these sort of hard line definitions of things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So if people would like to find you and engage you and chat with you or check out what you're doing, where should they look for you?
Oh, well, I'm on Facebook, for myself, Ellen Lorenzi Prince. The Dark Goddess Tarot has a page on Facebook. I have a group page called the Dark Goddess Lodge, which is really where we can more interact and work with and talk about the goddesses. And we have sometimes had kind of like rituals and events there. DarkGoddessTarot.com is where you'll see the Dark Goddess deck and the first sneak peek at the Minoan, which is, you know, is still in process. We haven't sent all the files to the printer with that yet.
Uh-huh. Amazing. When's it expected to be?
Well, we're hoping that we'll be able to get it printed and have it in hand around November. But,
great.
You know, once we are sure of a date and we get the website all done, you know, we can take pre-orders. So, but you can look at the website.
Amazing.
Or look at, you know, I don't have a huge online presence because I just, you know, online is just a weird place for me. It's kind of like being too exposed. I just want to be in my room drawing. And
It's like being in the lower astral, you know. You might meet the most wondrous of beings or the most horrible of projections,
exactly.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for chatting with me today, and thank you for weathering some of our technical back and forth too. I really appreciate that.
Oh, thank you. That was fun.